addition to gamelan music of Southeast Asia and contemporary trends that exist both in Europe and the United States in classical music, all of these things, forces come together as a part of my own aesthetic in terms of what I want to accomplish as a person. Uh-huh. And the composer is really, we're more anthropologists than anything else. People never think about this, but we document the culture.
Right.
And most people think you create, but we recreate. And I think the fact that we recreate is very important because it links us with everybody else. And uh-huh. I think that's a very important attitude to have as a creative person.
Composer T.J. Anderson. He'll be back in just a moment to talk about his work and with a musical excerpt. Welcome to Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Partial support for Soundings comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. T.J. Anderson is among the distinguished composers of his generation. He's widely known for his orchestration of Scott Joplin's operatic work and for the recording of classic rags and ragtime songs he conducted for the Smithsonian Institution. T.J. Anderson's own opera, a work entitled Soldier Boy, Soldier, was commissioned by Indiana University and was based on a libretto by the novelist Leon Forrest. He's also composed work for Fisk University in honor of its 100th anniversary and for the National Endowment for the Arts in celebration of America's bicentennial. Anderson's cantata, Spirituals, was performed at the dedication of the Martin Luther King Jr. Center for Social Change in Atlanta. In a few minutes, you'll hear an excerpt from T.J. Anderson's composition, Intermezzi. Right now, we begin with a conversation about his life and work. Now, you said that your mom was instrumental in your life musically,
yes.
and I want you to tell me about her very briefly, and give me a sense of your first memory of yourself as a musical-type person.
Well, I was a child, and my mother was a musician because she was from a family that was very religious, and her father was a minister. And, of course, they constantly had hymns around, but she provided a classical tradition as well as the jazz environment, which I found in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So that I was fortunate that all of these things came together. And I guess my first impression was really kindergarten, where I conducted the band. And my mother had a picture of me conducting this band, and the woman said that I would go far, you know, in music, and I don't know how far that has occurred, but that distance has occurred. But at the same time, it certainly was an inspiration to her and an inspiration to me.
Now, you're retired as we are doing this recording session, T.J. Anderson, and yet you are far from inactive. I mean, you have moved down from Tufts University, where you chaired the department for many years, and you now live in Chapel Hill, and yet you continue to be active as a composer, as a consultant. Here is another equally big order, T.J. Anderson. Give me a sense of the place, the role, the function of the serious composer in our American mass culture here at the end of the 20th century.
Well, I think all of us have an obligation to generate new works. And these new works have to link to new audiences. And, of course, what we are really talking about is the beginning of a new aesthetic, and this aesthetic has to represent the 20th century, or 21st century, I might add, in terms of where we are as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say culture, I'm not just speaking of the American culture. I'm talking about the world culture universally as we exist as human beings on the planet.
Well, now, in a way, we're back to one of our starting points, and that is to say, what made T.J. Anderson T.J. Anderson? We could talk about a European tradition. We could talk about, you mentioned, you know, sort of the music of the streets, mm-hmm. the music of the black church.
Mm-hmm.
You told me, the opportunity to attend concerts at your father's school at Howard University.
Mm-hmm.
It's an astonishing number of threads that come together that create the tradition, do we use that word, that
well,
you find yourself
well, I,
a part
I,
of?
Well, I think there's a cultural pluralism that exists within my life. And, of course, it's constantly growing. I mean, I've gotten fascinated in recent years by the music of the Ewe tribe in Ghana.
Uh-huh.
So that in addition to gamelan music of Southeast Asia and contemporary trends that exist both in Europe and the United States in classical music, all of these things, forces come together as a part of my own aesthetic in terms of what I want to accomplish as a person.
Uh-huh.
And the composer is really We're more anthropologists than anything else. People never think about this, but we document the culture.
Right.
And most people think you create, but we recreate. And I think the fact that we recreate is very important because it links us with everybody else. And I think that's a very important attitude to have as a creative person.
Well, now we're going to hear some of your music in a few minutes, T.J. Anderson. And I should tell our listeners that it is distinctly, what should we say, non-stereotypical. When we talk about black people and music, I suppose the first thing, or one of the first things that comes to mind, is the blues or jazz,
yes.
Ragtime, gospel music, that
yes.
kind of thing. As I say, your music is in the very serious compositional mode. It reflects the influence of Bach, you have told me. But before we get to that, tell me about these other threads that certainly must have had a great impact on your life. The music of the streets, jazz, ragtime, all of that.
Well, I grew up in a segregated environment. And in fact, I went to a black college. I'm a graduate of West Virginia State College, which was at that time was a black college. We had white professors. In fact, a number of professors were from Germany that came over with the rise of Hitler. So that we had a mixed faculty, but it certainly was all the students were African American.
Now, this is multiculturalism way in advance of multiculturalism.
Well, you really have to look at the home as a source, and the home. You can just look at jazz. I mean, jazz is multicultural. So that all of these forces, these indigenous forces, are really a product of what the American experience is all about. In other words, what we refer to it as a melting pot. I mean, I don't like the term, but at the same time, it does, as a metaphor, it does serve certain unique functions in description. And that as we live together, this diversity influences one another. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's what we become. And it's the process of becoming that makes us this nation.
Was there one particular sort of musical or cultural thread that you found exerting itself, that you have a sense of, an awareness of, you know, as you grew as a musician? Would it be jazz? Would it be the black church?
Well, since I went on the road when I was 12, it was jazz. It played professionally.
Uh-huh.
But when I talk about jazz, I'm really not talking about the things that most people think of in terms of jazz. I'm really talking about improvisation, the energy that comes from a soloist taking the music as a format and expanding upon it. And in many ways, that's what I do as a composer. I take the music and expand upon it.
Now,
and of course, Beethoven did it. This is development. I mean, in classical music, it's a precedent for it.
Is this the kind of thing that you expect from the musicians who perform your own music?
No. I remember studying with Mio. Mio once said, you know, I like musicians, but I don't trust them. You know, I think I have the same attitude. And in fact, my piece Variations on a Theme by M.B. Tolson, a lot of people say that section was improvised, and that's the environment that I wanted to create, the energy of jazz as improvisational.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, every note is written, so I have a tendency to write down everything. But in later works, I have been making use of improvisation as a definite part of the music.
How does a black American who is, after a fashion, a product of our popular culture, who is aware of, you know, sort of the street music, jazz, blues, gospel, all of that, how did you find yourself relating to the great tradition? That is to say, European music, classical composition. Was that a tension or an easy continuity?
It was easy because my mother, as I said, was a pianist, and she constantly played the music of McDowell, which was her favorite composer. And so she was tickled to death when I was a colonist at the McDowell colony. You know, you're going to the shrine, you know. And of course, McDowell is really a second-rate composer, but at the same time, he's important in that he generates an American audience for European music, which is a great part of our heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what has happened historically is that we have moved away from that European model. And I think this is a sign of progress.
What is the role, T.J. Anderson, that race, specifically, that one word, played in your history as a musician?
It's a mixture. In one sense, I'm proud of the the tradition of African Americans in America. That's a strength. The problem with it is the rejection of African American life and its experiences in the concert world. I mean, I think the large numbers of marvelous singers that we have, how many at the Met? I would ask you that. Mm-hmm. The number of African American youth that prepare for experiences in concert orchestras, how many are there? The number of composers, I would ask any person that goes to concert on a regular basis, how many African American composers can you name? So I'm saying all of this is the downside of it. Yet at the same time, while that's the downside of it, it hasn't in any way infringed on the music itself. So I come from a tradition that has produced in spite of the hardship.
What do you say, T.J. Anderson, to, I suppose the grandest sweep here would be the status of arts and music education in our country. We are living now in a political atmosphere in which it appears to be, the smart short-term thing to do is to cut this, to cut that, and yet the arts and music seem to enrich our youngsters' lives. I'm asking you to argue the case from both sides.
Well, I think to really understand, you have to understand where we are at this particular time of the century. I believe all of us are basically lonely, and we tend to be cut off from our roots. We tend to be cut off from the types of experiences we need to link us. I remember reading about the Pulitzer Prize winner Robert Butler, who really came to writing as a result of his experience in Vietnam.
Right.
Now he was lonely, so he took up writing as a means to address the madness. That's what he says. And of course, I take up writing as a means to trying to communicate with a particular audience. Okay. Let me give you another example. The most important writer for me in this country is my friend Philip Levine, who just won the Pulitzer Prize.
The poet.
Yeah, yes, the poet. Now, Phil told me that he has a readership of about 300 people. Now, he is the greatest poet in America telling me he only has 300 consistent readers. Now, if he only has 300, you can imagine how I say I'd be lucky if I have 100, or I'm lucky if I have 50. Uh-huh. But anyway, what the number doesn't matter. What really matters is that you are making links to people that feel the same loneliness, the same isolationness that you feel, and it's this joint experience that creates a new aesthetic and creates meaning.
How do you take that argument, T.J. Anderson, into the wide mass culture that we inhabit when we have this incredible disparity between the artist and the true sort of core constituency? Are the schools the answer?
The schools are part of the answer, but it doesn't get lost. In other words, your culture is documented whether you want to or not. Right. And the rejection of artists by the NEA or whatever, will not in any way stop art from being produced. I mean, there are some profound dysfunctionalities in the society in terms of recognition, in terms of importance, in terms of need. But at the same time, artists continue to create. And of course, the result of that is that one would hope that this becomes recognized by politicians and that the reinforcement of meaningful experiences in schools, and not only in terms of the aesthetic experience, I'd say the academic experience. We need to get involved more with computers, more in terms of intellectual development than we have been in the past, and that therefore this change of events should create a new attitude towards all the things that are important.
T.J., how would you describe the responsibility of artists such as yourself to the next generation of creative youngsters in our country? What do you have to say to them?
Well, I have been a teacher all my life, so that I have turned out students and I have told them to go forth, that they are going forth. I mean, I have one right now as assistant conductor of the Indianapolis Symphony. Another one is at the Pompidou Center in France. Another one is one of the leading avant-garde jazz pianists out in this country. A number of them are teaching in universities. So I believe that each generation has to answer for itself, and that they have to listen and create their own environment and speak in terms of things that they got significant.
T.J. Anderson, we're going to move toward a conclusion of our conversation. I'm going to invite you to describe a piece of your own music that we're about to hear. called Intermezzi. You composed this in 1983. Now, this ain't rock and roll here, my friend.
No.
This is pretty tough stuff. What are we about to hear?
Well, Wayne, this is the last section of a piece that has multiple performance possibilities. It can be performed as a solo piece called Intermezzo for clarinet, or Intermezzo for piano, Intermezzo for saxophone. And the three instruments come together under the title Intermezzi. Mm-hmm. Now, Intermezzi is not a trio. There are three independent pieces being played simultaneously, and that's what the listener will hear.
All right, and describe briefly for us, T.J. Anderson, the kinds of musical cultural threads that, what, played in your mind as you composed this piece.
The section that you will hear is very much influenced by Bach. It's also very much influenced by the blues, the loneliness of the blues, and it's the closing section of a work that has had a number of gestures which have been both violent and tender, so uh-huh. that this is a summation of those things that occur in the composition.
Is it utterly naive of me, T.J. Anderson, to say, does this music have a message? Does it have a kind of meaning? What does it mean to you?
Everything has a message, Wayne, whether we realize it or not. And I think we get sort of confused when we say, I want it to. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to do anything. All I want it to do is express what I feel. And if there are links with people that feel the same sense of gravity on the same plane, then it's meaningful. If it's not, I mean, that's fine. That's what we believe in, a culture of choice.
T.J. Anderson, let's listen to some of your music.
Thank you.
T.J. Anderson, we have just heard Intermezzi, your composition from 1983, Eric Thomas, J. Michael Leonard, and Vivian Taylor. What are you working on these days?
Oh, I have a number of projects. One, I have a premiere of a piece called Seven Cabaret Songs on a text by Harriet Mullins, which was commissioned by the Mallarmé Chamber Players for the jazz singer Nina Freelon. I also have a piece, Spirit Song, commissioned by Yo-Yo Ma for cello and piano that'll come up soon. I also have a string quartet entitled Grace, which has been commissioned for the Bill T. Jones, Arnie Zane Dance Company, so that those things are works that'll come up in the near future.
What about this collaboration with one of our Nobel laureates, Derek Walcott?
Oh, yes. Derek and I wrote an opera. It's called Walker, which was commissioned by the Boston Athenaeum. We have already had a reading of the work, and I might add it was quite successful in Boston in 1993. This fall, I think there's a planned production with stage sets, instruments, and everything in Boston, so we're looking forward to that. That should be a big event.
Well, TJ, I want to thank you very much for coming by the National Humanities Center. I admire you and I admire your work. I confess that I don't understand it, but I'm going to work at it, and I appreciate your willingness to speak on Soundings and to talk to our listeners about what you do as a composer.
Well, Wayne, I must say that you sound like my mother when you say you don't understand it, but she loves me dearly. So, and I certainly have enjoyed being here with you.
You're listening to Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. My guest was composer T.J. Anderson. The music you heard was T.J. Anderson's Intermezzi and featured Eric Thomas, J. Michael Leonard, and Vivian Taylor. Intermezzi is on a compact disc entitled Videmus, available from New World Records. For a cassette tape of this program, please send $10 to Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Our zip code is 27709. Ask for program number 778. That's program number 778. Our address again is Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, the zip code 27709. Next week on Soundings, the first of two programs about information technology and American education. My guest will be David K. Allison of the Smithsonian Institution. You'll also hear from several of the winners, nominees, and finalists in the 1995 Computer World Smithsonian Awards program. Until next week's show, thanks for listening to Soundings. Partial support for this program comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Our theme music is by Jeff Perry. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center. Award-winning music of composer T.J. Anderson, this week on Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. T.J. Anderson is one of this country's distinguished contemporary composers. He'll be here to talk about his work and with an excerpt from one of his compositions, a piece entitled Intermezzi. T.J. Anderson will also reflect on the perils and rewards of serious musical composition in American mass culture and talk about music in our schools. T.J. Anderson, some answers, insights, and a musical excerpt this week on Soundings.